Welcome to the Motivated Creative Podcast, where we dive into inspiring stories and journeys of handmade business owners, as well as giving guides and teachings to help grow your own creative business. I'm Nikki, I'm your host, and every week I'll bring you insights, tips, and heartfelt conversations with passionate artisans, creative entrepreneurs, and business experts. Whether you're just starting out or you're looking to take your handmade business to the next level, this podcast is for you. Hello and welcome back to the Motivated Creative Podcast. Today we've got a really special guest with us. We've got Elaine Hughes. Elaine is a diversity, equality and inclusion coach, which I think all of us need a little bit more of at this time, you know, with everything going on. So we're going to chat today all about the strength of building businesses that fits within your lifestyle, whatever that lifestyle is. We all have different things going on, you know, whether we've got disabilities, neurodiversity, whatever that is. And sometimes it just doesn't feel like you can do it. So me and Elaine are going to chat to you today. I love talking to Elaine about all this sort of stuff. We've had a couple of conversations about it. I'm really excited for you to hear everything that she thinks, because she's amazing. So hey, Elaine, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Nikki. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really, really good. I'm really glad to have you on board, because I think a lot of people worry. I mean, I'm one of them, worried so much about how I could start a business knowing that I was neurodiverse. You know, I have a neurodiverse family. I'm trying to balance life. It's really difficult. But actually, once I started to implement business into my life, it made it so much easier rather than going out to a 9-to-5 every day and having to deal with that. But it's a lot of people out there do find it really difficult to understand finding that balance in their life. Do you find that's why a lot of people come to you, finding that balance and help it, and needing help with that?
Yeah, I think anything with anything in life is a struggle and starting a business. So there's a saying that there's never a good time to start a business, which you kind of think it's true. And I think if you've got a health condition, or whether that be neurodiversity, or whether it's physical or hidden, you know, you may not be in that frame of mind. But statistics show that more and more disabled people are actually starting their own businesses, you know, whether that be online or in person. But say, because, you know, and a lot of them are working it around their health condition, because of more flexibility. You know, saying, so whether it be, you know, as a disabled person, you know, saying, whether, you know, again, you know, you tend to know your working pattern. So for myself, as someone who's disabled, who's physically disabled, I am really great in the mornings. In the afternoons, not so good. So I tend to get up really, really early, do loads of stuff. And in the afternoon, I'm kind of like chilled. because that's how my body works, and that's how my condition works. So you're saying, I think as more and more, you know, in around the world are waking up to disability inclusion and stuff like that, they're realizing that more and more disabled people or become more and more entrepreneurs. So it's actually growing faster than ever.
That's really brilliant to hear. Really, really brilliant to hear. I think over the years, I mean, I come from a really traditional sort of background where it was like, pull your socks up, get on with it, you know, you'll be absolutely fine. And that's why, you know, I'm not diagnosed till later on in life, you know, going through that diagnosis now, all of that sort of stuff, because you just get on with it sort of lifestyle. So, you know, now to hear that people are actively becoming entrepreneurs with disabilities, that must be a brilliant statistic for us to be working from.
Yeah, I think it also just shows to the potential and the resilience of the disabled community. Because they're looking at other alternatives, they're looking at other ways around situations. So there's people that say, the myth that disabled people don't want to work. The majority of people who are disabled are actually in some kind of work or some format. The problem is that a lot of employers don't know how to keep disabled people in work by supporting them. So disabled people are creative. I'm saying a lot of disabled people are crafters. You know what I'm saying? There's lots of people, candle makers, card makers, cross stitchers, all these kind of things, bakers. Because they can do it around their own time, they can do it around their own energy levels, you know what I mean? And that's how I started, you know what I'm saying? My own craft, you know, because I spent a lot of time in the hospital crafting as a child. I turned that into a business. I just think that, as the world becomes more and more open, people, and obviously with the flexibility of the world as it is, people are realizing that you don't have to be in an office to work. You can be in you can be around, you can be sat on the beach and work. There's so many more options now. I think as the world becomes more fluid and as people start realizing that you can do more homework, I think the pandemic kind of opened that up, that hybrid, more and more deal people are looking at those options.
I understand that 100% because I feel like I was never a classroom baby. Like I hated sitting in the classroom. I hated sitting at school, but I loved learning and I loved doing things and I loved being active. It's just that, that 9 to 5 sat by a desk being told what to do all the time. It's not comfortable. It's not always, especially for creative minds as well. Not just about the disability, but having that creativity and that balance of the two. Not necessarily. I mean, I'm sat at a desk now because we're recording, but my laptop will be on my knee on the sofa within by the end of this recording.
Why not?
And I think that's really important to find that balance and know that balance. But I think a lot of people worry, and from people I've spoken to in the past, there is that worry of people believing you're lazy because you may only work 2 or 3 hours a day, but actually, that's 100% of your ability in some cases. That's you're giving 100% of your mind, your body in that time. And that's really disheartening to hear from people to say that people think I'm lazy when they're actually giving 100%.
Well, I get it. I'm saying, but then if you look at it from a point of view that say people have to, people with disabilities or health conditions with them, have to adapt to so many things. They have to adapt to life. They have to adapt to, if they've got children, they have to adapt to managing their health conditions. So we're probably more, in my view, more experienced in everything because we are adapting to lots of different scenarios. We have to, so for someone like myself who's got CP, I have limited use of my hands, so I have to think of different ways to open cans and how to maneuver things and stuff like that. So I'm more creative. So if I'm working on a project, I'm going to be thinking out of the box. So I'm going to look at it from a different perspective and say, okay, well, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? From the ease, I'm looking at it from a disabled person's perspective where we view the world differently. It could be for a VA who's got, who's got autoimmune disease and something like that, and they may be working throughout the night. So while everyone's sleeping, they could be working 6 hours through the night and get loads of work done. So by the time the boss comes in from work the next morning, he says, "Oh, where's my stuff? It's all done," and they're sleeping for the rest of the day. There's just different ways. And so I think it's just those things, but it's how businesses reframe it and just say to yourself, "What can I do?" And then how do you make it into bite-sized chunks so it's manageable? And that could be around children, that could be around your health condition. It's how you manage it and make you more effective.
I think it's those little things, isn't it? It's those being able to, like yesterday, brilliant sunshine. I took my laptop outside and I did some of my work outside. And because I need to be, filling up my energy in order to give out energy, and I need to be actively doing that constantly to be able to give out the right level of energy. And that's something I found with like going through my neurodivergent sort of journey I'm going through, which started with finding out about my kids and then realizing it was genetic, and now I'm going through this journey myself. But understanding that about myself was really important, and I think not I've spent like the last year or so looking out into the world and going, okay, I'm not like all of you. I'm me, I'm individual. This is what's typical with my sort of problems. How can I adapt that? And I think there's that essence of being kind to yourself and adapting, the way you are and whatever condition you have. I understand mine isn't physical, but also having to think outside the box of, okay, I don't do well sat at a desk all day, so where can I work? And having to look at other scenarios. But do you find that people are comfortable looking at those scenarios, or are we teaching people enough about those scenarios?
At the moment, we've got an explosion of neurodiversity, which is amazing. I mean, so it's more normal. It's like the health stigmas of mental health back in the late 80s and 70s. I'm saying it was very, 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 very stigmatized, and then eventually we started talking more and more about it, and it became more awareness. We've got that at the moment with neurodiversity. My only concern is that that some that it's not at the sake of other disabilities. So I think there's still a lot of lack of conversation around intersectionality of, you know, being visually impaired in neurodiverse or being physically disabled and all that. I mean, there's lack of conversation around that. But at the moment, every you see it all over social media, everyone's going out and saying ADHD, you know, or I'm autistic, which is great for the awareness, but you have to remember that not everyone's the same. You know, it doesn't present itself in everybody. And I think it's, you know, about being comfortable with yourself and learning about it. But I also believe, I also have a thing that I call like the 8 stages of grieving, the grieving process. And for me, that's a big piece about letting go of your own life. So I always say, I've often talked to people who, I was born disabled and that's fine. And I've had to go through it myself to some extent. But I always, when I speak to people who've become disabled or found out they've had a late diagnosis of a condition, I've always said to them, you need to go through that grieving process step. And people look at me like I'm crazy, and I'm like, well, yeah, because like, you have to grieve for your own life. Can you look at things? You're now going into a new chapter, and you're looking at it very, very different perspective. Just saying, so you can't hang on, you can't drag the past. You mean, you have to let go. At some point, you have to let go and form a new chapter. I did that when I went out when I had been medically retired from work. I had to let go of the fact that I couldn't work no more in that corporate, you know, corporate environment kind of thing. I had to let go of that and into a new chapter. And that for me was a grieving process because that's what I'd always known. I come from baby background like you, pulling your socks, saying, get on with it. My mum used to tell me as a child, just saying, no one owes you anything in this world. Just saying, don't mean no one's going to give you anything in this world. I wasn't allowed to claim benefits. But even though I was entitled to benefits, I wasn't allowed to claim benefits from my parents because they just didn't do that. I mean, they were an immigrant family from the UK. But they never did that. I mean, they never claimed me because everyone was working. You know what I mean? My mum had like 2 or 3 jobs. My dad having 2 or 3 jobs. So they never claimed me off the state. So I wasn't allowed to claim benefits because it was like, it was for them, it's like embarrassment and shame.
Yeah, it's a big taboo. Absolutely, it's a big taboo.
My mum would not allow it. You mean, if you did say to her, you were going to claim, you had to get out of her house. She was not going to have anything. It was really embarrassing. So that's what I came with. But then I realised I had to let go, like, I had to do my work myself to let go of what it is. And I think a lot of people who are finding out late diagnoses of maybe neurodiversity or who become disabled, you know, you have to let go. And once you do that, it's kind of a self-healing. And then you can go on to learn how to do things differently. Things start making a bit more sense.
I understand that 100% because it is a grieving process. And I don't think the medical world understand how hard the information hits people and how hard it can affect people. And, you know, I will always class myself as blessed because I don't have a physical disability. You know, mine is, you know, a learning disability. But I still feel, you know, blessed in the fact that I can do things, but I still like to try and help people. But I remember when my son was diagnosed, this is when I first started the entire journey with my, you know, my second child born. No, you know, it's something wasn't right. We battled for 8 years for them to take us seriously. So it was a real fight. So I didn't have time to think about anything else because I was battling for my child, like, look at my child. Then when we finally got the diagnosis, the mixture of relief that actually I was right and there was something there. It wasn't just me like making it up in my head, but also that, oh my God, everything that I'd planned. Because when you have a child, you know, or when, you know, as you're growing up through life for yourself or for the people that you have in your life, you almost have like a mental plan, don't you? So either for yourself, you're going to grow up, you're going to get married, you're going to be, you know, you're going to be successful in what you do. You're going to have a house. You're going to have kids. Your kids are going to grow up and get married. And you imagine this scenario. And then that gets taken away from you in a 20-minute meeting in a clinical office. And that entire thing just gets, oh, it's awful.
I've said that all the time. I remember going to a conference. I said to the other, it's amazing how you get counselling for certain things, but you don't get counselling for when you're diagnosed with a disability or a health condition. And they said to me, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, I said, you're just expected just to deal with it. You know what I mean? It's like saying something, you know, this your life's going to change from now forward. But meanwhile, just here's a little 2-page leaflet, go away. That's going to say, it doesn't deal with emotions. It doesn't deal with the thoughts or the, you know, the thoughts of failure and letting people down and what could have been and what would be. And no one says to you, you know, how can we process it? Are you okay? Or if you try to explain to the people, but then also you've got to deal with like the stigmas from outside the world. So when you tell people, it's their perceptions, right? You've got to deal with that. And you're like, okay, you can just handle it. Well, no one cares. Well, actually, I hate that those people as well. No one cares what those people think. Well, actually, you do.
Yeah.
You know, we do care. We live in a world where we do.
It's only natural.
So we sit there and say, well, it's no one else's business, or you don't care what you think. Actually, you do. You didn't think that way, obviously you are moving on back. You do. So there's whole, you know, and then obviously you've got the stigmas and communities and all that. So there's lots of things. So I think sometimes, I think it's about self-reflection, it's about healing. It's about taking it into small bite-sized chunks and just saying, okay, we can deal with this little bit today, do this little bit tomorrow, and so forth until you get a full grasp of it. Don't try and digest all of it in one go and expect everything to be okay, because it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I do think that you should be given even some counselling, but even just, I don't know, a little mini expo once a year of what other things you can do. That would be great. Do you know if we've just had an exhibition once a year, like, okay, so you're not going to be, you know, stacking shelves at Asda, you're not going to be working in a desk job, you're not going to be, what else can you do? And giving opportunities for people when they think their life is taken from them. And I think that's because that's one of the things that you go through when you're going through all those emotions is what sort of life am I going to have? What sort of life are my children going to have?
I think personally, I think disability should be taught in school. I think we should have disability history in school. I think because obviously we've got Black history, we've got all these holidays and stuff like that that's taught in school. You never hear about the history of disabled people. So, you know what I mean? So just historically, let's go through facts. You know, the typewriter was created by a blind guy, you know, a man for his blind fiance. There's lots of inventions, you know, iPhones and stuff like that, the software that's actually used behind iPhone, the touchpads were all done for disabled people back in the early 80s, the Vinci iPhone caught onto it, and now we have a smartphone. Everyone's got a smartphone in their pocket with a touch phone facility. So I'm saying, so why aren't we teaching these kind of histories in school? why aren't we saying to companies that, you know, hiring a disabled person into your company means that you will suddenly be 70% more profitable, means that your workforce will be a lot happier because you'll be more inclusive. Why aren't we talking about these conversations? And that's because we still have this disconnect around, you know, the stigma around disability, that everyone's on benefits and blah, 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 blah. When in fact, it's not the case. Like I said earlier, you know, 80% of disabled people are actually in some kind of work. I'm saying, but they often leave work because their employer can't manage their disability at work. So let's do some retraining for the employer on how they can support their people work. Or let's encourage disabled entrepreneurs. Like at the moment, disabled entrepreneurs, you know, they don't get access to grants or funding, like you know, like somebody who's on job seeker. Like, let's put all these pieces in things in places so that people who have ADHD or who have autism or who may be visually impaired, who wants to start their own business, can actually go into a pot of funding and say, I want to start my business, can you support? And then we give them the funds, because it's been proven over and over again that disabled people are the fastest growing business entrepreneurs out there, but get zero, because I like less than 1% of venture funding capital they get.
It's awful. If you were, so I always try, because I know I'm one voice, I'm one person, and it doesn't matter how many people I rank to, chances of change happening in my lifetime is quite slim, right? Maybe in my children's lifetime, but my lifetime, I think I'm gonna, you know, it's gonna be a hill that I die on, the looking for change, you know, and I'm still fighting with processes and things at the moment when it comes to my children and how diagnosis and support works. But what I try and do is say to people, look, those changes aren't coming, so what are you going to do? So if you could give maybe a couple of bits of advice to people who are, you know, disabled, whether that be physical or learning disabilities, and are looking at another opportunity for themselves, because, you know, they're smart, they've got creativity, they know they want to do something, they don't want to just sit around, they want to be able to provide for themselves. What advice would you give them? Where would you advise them to start?
I would say just do it. You know, I built a figure for my sofa. My first business, I sat on my sofa and just enjoying and just sold and, you know, just found things around the house. I could take pictures and just took them on eBay and sold them and built that up into a six-figure business. So it can be done. I think just do it, because don't wait for, you know, just if you feel like you've got a business idea and you want to do it, just do it, because the industry, because tech and industries now are starting to wake up and realize it. So people like Apple, the recent GAD festival, which is the Global Accessibility Awareness Day, don't ask me, GAD. So big companies are starting to take a thing. Amazon is starting to realize the power of disabled entrepreneurs, Apple, Google, they're starting to realize, so Google are putting things in place, and laws coming through over the year, in the next few years. So people start to wake up with it. Oh, okay, disabled people got, oh, we didn't realize it. And I was speaking to a friend of mine, and he made a paper. He said the one last tap community that has never been tapped, that's financially, is a disabled community. So over the next 5-10 years, that's going to just blow up. So anyone who wants to start their own business now needs to get in now at the grassroots, because 5-10 years time, it's just going to blow up, because that, you know, the pink pound's been doing, the grey pound's been doing, the purple pound's been doing, it's not even scratching the surface. And that goes from a whole range. That goes whole range from products to make sure people's lives easier, to legal and insurance services, to healthcare, to day-to-day living. It's just going to explode. So there's only next like 10-20 years, you're going to see massive rise in people tapping into the sale. But it's the last untapped market.
And this is the thing, we're in the best place to know what other people that have similar diagnosis to ourselves will need. Like I make PDFs for the boys to look at their chores and their timetables and things like that. We know what we need because we're using them every day. We're altering our own lives to make it comfortable for ourselves. So if you've got a business idea, well, even if you've not, if you've made something that's absolutely brilliant that's helped your family, recreating that and selling that on to somebody else who is also in a similar position, you can't go wrong, right?
Yeah, when I had my shop, I remember there's a woman that made a sensory booklet. It was really good, actually. She's all hand sewn, bless her. And because her daughter, I believe, was autistic, and I think she was ADHD, she was autistic. And she created a sensory book for her that she hand sewn herself. And it had all the movable parts and everything. And we suggested she could stock it in my shop. And obviously it took her a while to make each other, because they were handmade. And she eventually ended up getting like a massive loan and make her. And it flew off the shelves because it was ideal, because people were like, oh my God, this is what we did. It had all the crinkle noises, it had everything. I mean, it had everything you needed for kids with sensory issues. And I'm like that when I talk to people in the events industry, holiday industry. I'm like, well, can't, you know, what if you made like a play area, but like a quiet play area next to it for kids who had sensory needs, you know what I'm saying? And like, oh, I didn't think about that. And they're like, oh yeah, it works. My money's gone up, because it's all word of mouth. It's like the great example of it. It's Mike did it beautifully. When that young kid, I've forgotten his name, it's gone right. When he, the athlete, he wrote to Nike and said, look, I've got CP, I'm an athlete, I need trainers, I can't get trainers. And Knight were like, what do you need? And he said, can I come in? And they designed him and one zone, sat down in his own pair of trainers, and then also they actually had somebody on their team who actually had a stroke. He was learning to walk again. So they used his ideas and this guy's ideas. That, although it was a commercial success off, you know, in the big world, in the group disabled groups, 5-year waiting list.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is it. Once we find a product that we can use and find a product that's going to help us almost have a semi-normal life, get to a point where we will buy it, we will go, we will hunt down these products.
Even they tried to get LeBron to sponsor it. It wouldn't take, he walked, people didn't like it. But the disabled community, even now, they end up doing a woman's race, they end up doing a choice, and they don't even advertise. You know, you get it on Instagram, you get it on their website. I mean, you have to go to the website. But they still got like a 2-3 year waiting list for it because it's so big within the disabled community. So it works. So, you know, Kim Kardashian's another one. She did the adaptable underwear range. And Rihanna, they started realizing they obviously bought their own nude kind of like, you know, shades of underwear. They realised that, okay, we need this stuff for women who are, you know, who are disabled, that they might need a clip-on underwear. They started, it's flying off the shelves. So people start to wake up, okay, there's more to it than that. So I think that's what I say to anybody who is in that position, and they're thinking, just do it. This is the time to get into the market.
I love that. I think that just do it. I think we all get in it our own way. And we sort of think, well, no one's going to want this. You know, I've made it myself. No one's going to want it. But actually, you know, when I was first trying to find things for my boys, there was nothing. There was very little out there. And I then was forced to make my own stuff because I couldn't find what they needed anywhere. Now, there's so many different people doing it, and I'm like, oh, that's brilliant to see that now it's more open.
There's a lady called Samantha, I forgot her name, I think it's Samantha, I'm sure Samantha, what is Samantha, but she runs like a black card company where she does images of black children, but she created a whole range of kids who had autism or ADHD or in a wheelchair, and I mean, all these images, and you're like, wow. there's a need for, because it's apparently, you know, it's like Barbie, but even Barbie's getting onto it when they created wheelchair Barbie and Stomaband Barbie. So I mean, so more and more of these big companies are starting to wake up and realise and tap into it. Okay, we need to start tapping into it. So this is, I would say to Emily, this is the time now, get in there, because 5-10 years from now, it's going to explode.
And this is the thing, we're disabled, but we're still human. And we want that representation, and we want products that are made for us. And we want, you know, even down to the fact that we want services that are made for us as well. You know, I work with a lot of freelancers, and I'm very particular when I choose freelancers, because I have to sort of put out there like, hey, I'm crazy. I will message you a mind dump at 2 a.m. I'm really sorry.
I do that.
I have those mad like ideas at like 2:00 a.m. and I'm up and I'm like wide awake, and I'm like, I have to write it all down now, otherwise I'm going to forget, you know. But I have to sort of warn people. So even services, not just necessarily products, but services as well, understanding what we need. You know, if you are someone that suffers physically or learning difficulties or with mental difficulties, whatever you're suffering with, there are other people. You're not the only one. And if you can provide them with services where you're going to understand what they need, it's going to be much easier for them to feel human. And I think that's what we miss.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely services. I agree. I mean, I'm saying there's more and more, get people to start to realise that there's more and more support in terms of access to work and stuff like that and workplaces and stuff. But I definitely think the more we talk about it, and also, it's like calling people out. I mean, like when you call people out on, you know, lots of issues around the world, but how do you actually call people out on stuff about being disabled? Or, you know, saying, oh, that comment you just put out there, it's a little bit ableist. I mean, we very rarely call out. So it's getting comfortable in your skin. And I'll say, I've been advocating for a long time. And my voice is just one of the, you know, millions of others that are shouting out. But I always find, you know, that I think it's come around, I'd like to say, in my lifetime, I don't know. Maybe. Maybe who knows? I'm a lot of these. Who knows? Maybe. I don't know. But we'll see. But I do think that it takes. We have to have this conversation. We have to be asked. I always say people. I don't want to be the person giving you the ideas. I want to be the one sat at the boardroom talking to the white men who was at that table. I want to be there. You know what I mean? So as I get, some people don't want to be there. That's where I try to position myself in that boardroom. Say, okay, what can we do? What can you do? And even it's not just about, you know, starting a business. It's about your customers. Your customers could be disabled. You know what I mean? So how are they interacting with your product? And disabled people are loyal. I mean, we are, disabled community is loyal, and it's not just the disabled community, the actual disabled person. It's their family members. It's their friends. It's their, see people who work with them. So we're very, very loyal. And like I say, and businesses learning to realise that, you know, this is just a general, but, you know, businesses learning using £2 million a year. So of course, £2 million a month, so they're not tapping into that space. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, a lot of opportunity, absolutely. And, you know, if you can make someone feel seen and make someone feel human in your products or your services, whatever it is you have, they are going to continue to come back. I know if someone talks to me in a positive way and has a good conversation with me, I actually put a post out on my Facebook not that long ago about an experience where I walked into one shop that I love, I absolutely love. I'm a shoe fiend. Walked into the shoe shop. I've been looking at their stuff for years. Walked in, got the worst customer service. I literally sat there. It was just me and my daughter. And I, you know when you sort of just log it? You just sort of go, yeah, okay. And they're not cheap shoes, because I honestly believe that if I'm going to buy something pretty, there doesn't need to be a budget. But my husband doesn't agree, but I agree.
That's what I'm saying.
But then walked into another shop, and I'd never been into this store before. I'd seen their stuff online, but I'd never really been into the store. And oh my God, I had this wonderful conversation with the store manager. She was just really engaging. She was really chatty. And I wasn't there to buy. I even said to her, look, I'm here for aspirations. Like, I'm looking for, you know, when I hit my next goal, what pair of shoes I'm going to get for that next goal. Because I treat myself to either shoes or a handbag. I'm such a girl. I treat myself to either shoes or a handbag every time I reach a business goal. And she was like, oh my God, yes, come in. I said, I'll bring a bottle of champagne. She said, we'll sit here, we'll try them all on. And she was excited for me. She was like, I can't wait to see you. That means you've hit your goal. Like, and she was really engaging and she took on what I was saying, and she gave an opinion back. She wasn't just paying lip service to it. And they gained a customer that day. And I will die in a ditch over it. That customer service, making someone feel seen, feel heard. She probably does that same thing with everyone that walks through the door. You know, I'm not here to think that it's just me.
A friend of mine, not to kick you, had a very similar thing with Louis Vuitton. I'm not going to name one because they made my friend, she was doing another friend of mine, two of my friends went, one was a wheelchair, one's not. They went to go Louis Vuitton, just down the ground. And they couldn't get in because obviously the steps go into Louis Vuitton. And they had to go through the store next door, through the service elevator, through a long corridor, around the back, and then in through the storage room into the Vuitton. And my friend, bless him, he documented it and put it on LinkedIn. And said, look, this is what we had to go through. But to be fair to the Vuitton, they actually did straight away. Within days, they had put a ramp at the front door, and they put, like, to do with this, they could put down their steps to change into a ramp, so it goes from step to a ramp if you need it. And they were really, really, really apologetic. But that's what I'm saying. So customers, companies do listen, but you need to call them out. So if someone hadn't said to me, so if you hadn't posted that video and Louis Vuitton hadn't seen it, and were taking on them, very, very apologetic for me. Oh yeah, and they took action, and they were actually just training with them. But it takes those conversations. I'm saying, and that's what I'm saying, and that's what I'm saying about us talking about it and talk about it and say to people, no harm. I say to when I have my e-commerce business, I say to customers, look, I'm sorry your order's not gone out today because I'm feeling unwell. I have a disability. I will get out to you soon now. So I say, if you can't wait, I can refund you. But I mean, and most markets were like, oh, it's fine, no problem. I understand, you know, my child's disabled, blah, 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 blah. I get it, blah, blah. So obviously, some people were like, you're a bit nasty, saying, that's not just give them a refund. But on the whole, most people were really positive. I get it. I understand. I've got a chronic condition myself. I know what it's like. It's tiring, blah, blah, blah. And there's no... So use it to your advantage.
It's all about conversation. I think that's the key in all of this, is having that conversation, either with people around you, you know, if you're looking at developing a business idea, have a chat to the community that it will help, and talk to them and say, this is what I'm thinking, would you guys use it? Knowing that there's a need there for anything that you want, just like you would do normally, is, you know, do your research. You know, is your product helpful? Is your service helpful? Who is it going to help? How is it going to help them? How am I going to make it the best customer service experience possible on the planet? And it puts you back into a workplace where you're in control of your lifestyle. You're in control of your ability or disability, whichever way, you know, you look at it. And you can control how and when you work. And I think that's the key, isn't it? Is taking back that control in your own life to be able to make money, you know, provide a service, feel like you're doing something, and actually work towards something positive.
Yeah, and also have boundaries. I mean, that's it. Okay, if you don't feel well to work today, you don't have to work today. You know what I mean? Yeah, and that's the beauty of that. That's what I say to people that I know who say, that's the beauty of being a disabled entrepreneur or self-employed. If I get up in the morning and I'm in too much pain, I'm sitting on the set with my blanket and I'm watching Netflix, mate. Until I feel better. And it may well be that at 2 a.m. that morning, I just get onto the computer and start working for 3 hours straight. But I've taken a whole day to rest and do what my body needs. I can fit stuff around my hospital appointments, my medical treatment, whatever I need to do. I mean, I can go off and go to a hairdresser and pamper myself because I need that downtime to read. Now, but I couldn't do that if I was employed by an employer. I wouldn't have that flexibility. But because I'm self-employed, I have that flexibility of working. It doesn't mean I don't get to work done. I still have, I've still got stuff to do. I've still got, you know, achievements, you know, meetings and stuff like that. But even if I want to cancel my whole diary for the day and move stuff around, I have that flexibility to do it. So, and then the one thing that I always say to you as well, if you do have a health condition, block out your non-negotiables. Make sure you have your non-negotiables in the week. My people laugh at me all the time, and I say, block it out. If you've got appointments that you need to do, put them in your diary straight away. And non-negotiables. So for me, on a Friday afternoon, I try not to work, so I block it out. You can't, I don't want to hear it. I don't care what it is.
I do the same thing. I do the exact same thing.
So that's I try to put in each week on a Sunday evening. I go through and I put what are my non-negotiables. So for me, it could be studying time. I'm doing a course. So because I hate when you buy a course, you don't do it. You're just too busy to do it. So I've turned that to non-negotiables. So if I bought a course and I spent £1,000 on a course, I'm going to need that course. I'm going to be sitting down and do that course. If I want to go to the hairdresser, so stuff like me, because I'm disabled, I can't wash my hair, and stuff like I have to go to. So for me, every 2 weeks I go to the hairdresser. That is a non-negotiable. It's not being moved. I don't care. I don't care if your cheese falls you down. I don't care what it is. I'm not fucking out.
And that's exactly what a non-negotiable is for. I do the exact same thing. Mondays are my admin days. It's where I can sit in my pajamas all day and just do all my emails, that sort of stuff. Wednesday afternoons, I'm out. I'm not here Wednesday afternoon because I need a midweek break. I'm terrible. I do need a midweek break. And I boss babe it Monday, Tuesday. I have Wednesday afternoons off. And then I boss babe it Thursday, Friday. And I know that that's how I work. So I put it in. It's out. It's gone. You won't ever see me on a Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely. But for me, it's Friday afternoon. So Friday is 12 o'clock. My diary is blocked out, mate. Don't even try it. If you can't, I mean, No. And then every second Thursday morning at 9 o'clock, I'm blocked out for the hairdressers. That is my non-negotiable. I am not moving it. I don't care what it is. I don't care what kind of meeting it is. I don't care how important you think it is. I've got plenty of time in my diary. If you can't fit in that time, sorry. So I'm saying to everybody, if you've got a health condition, non-negotiables, and don't shift it.
That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So just go through, because you've given so much good advice and good tips. I love talking to you. I just get such a good vibe from it. I love it. But if you were looking at building your own business, if you are, you know, having learning difficulties, physically disabled, anything else, key tips, go through your whole, like, your process, your mental process of grieving for the life you thought you were going to have. Go through the process, allow yourself to have those emotions, then get up and do it. Do what you need to do. If you have an idea, just go and do it. But make sure you book in those non-negotiables into your diary so that you are balanced in your life, to balance your physical, mental health, to make sure that you are the best person you could be at any which time.
Hey, so, and also, just also, number three for me, it's okay to say no.
Yes, I think we're both still learning that.
Yeah, I'm learning you, but I say that to all my clients. It's okay to say no. You don't have to say yes to everything. No matter how good it looks, and avoid FOMO. Forget FOMO. The FOMO, forget it. Forget fear of missing out. It means nothing. Forget it. You don't have to say yes to everything. You mean you can say no? And as Nikki said, I'm still learning it 10 years later.
We're all still learning this one.
The world keeps telling, as my old coach used to say, the world keeps, you say no to something, the world keeps doing. What I've learned in business, or with you probably still the same thing, that when there's always other opportunities, when it comes to you, you look at it, you think, oh, that's a bit shit, or that's a bit, you know, that's not quite on my street. They're saying, and you think, okay, I'm gonna, oh, you know, or you might think, oh my god, something's happened, I missed that, and the greatest opportunity. And then something comes along, and you're like, actually, you know what? That was what. So I've realised now that it's just not my time. I mean, it's just that wasn't right for me. There's something about it. It looks great. But I've got apprehension. I'm apprehensive about it. So something's not quite right with it. It may not be. I know. I mean, and I'm learning that path at the moment. That, you know, when things go up, so I'm not worrying that. So if things come past me, great. I wish you all the best. I have no mastery in this world. I wish nothing but success to you. It's just not the right time for me. But something will come along when I'm ready, and that's when I will, and I will know at that point. So that's how I kind of view my life now.
I love that. I heard a quote not that long ago that was similar to that. Is, for everything you say yes to, you're saying no to something else. So if you don't actually just listen to your gut and follow that instinct, you may be saying yes to the wrong thing and not have the ability to say yes to the thing you actually, like, actually resonates with you.
Yeah.
And I think there is the element of that. We all want to say, yeah, of course, yeah, and sort of get everything on board, especially when you're new to business. You sort of want to just say yes to everything because you feel like every opportunity is a good opportunity. But it's about just listen to your gut, listen to your instincts. You know whether it's the right thing. And if there's any little bit of doubt, and no, I don't mean like self-doubt, you know, because we all have those days where we go, I can't possibly do this, you know, but not about self-doubt. But if there's any doubt in that opportunity, it means it's not the one for you, but your opportunity's coming. So politely say no. No is a full sentence as well. You don't have to explain why. Politely say no and go on, and you will find the right opportunities will come to you when you leave time in your world for them to be able to fit into that world. If you're too busy, your opportunity will miss you.
Exactly, yeah. And also, this is one more thing, I'll shut up. don't go into the trap of buying every course you see. Just buy what you need. I wish I'd known this like 5-6 years ago, of just buying every course that I see, and then you can sit there in a lifetime access and do nothing with it. Or you forget, like I do, you forget what courses you've had until you buy it again and you realise you've got two courses. Honestly, so what I do now is I write down what I need and then how I'm going to use that to get to the next step of where I'm going to be. So that's the thing I would say that you learn. So, and as someone who's disabled, money is finite. So really think about where you're putting your money in. How will what you're paying for get you to your next step? So if you want to start a business and you've got big it, so that idea of business, you want that little bridge you want to grow, what do you need? You might not need a business strategist right away. That course might be really entertaining and it looks fantastic. But you actually might just need a foundation to business. Do you know what I'm saying? So really think about that foundation's business means that I can then look at putting it into practice and scaling it. Okay, so the next course that I need to be to is scaling it, or you might need to do some work on actually selling the course and then so really think try and think of a trajectory or your plan of how you want your business to look and what you want to do with it, and then look at courses that are, don't just do the shiny object, because you buy shiny objects and they sit in the cupboard.
Yeah, they don't last. I will say I have been guilty of that in the past. I've done many courses and I've had a really interesting conversation with someone recently that said, yeah, but you just keep buying the courses because you just need more confidence in yourself. I was like, excuse me? They're like, you're intelligent and you know what to do. You've got the... Why do you keep buying the courses? And it's like, oh my God, like I've spent so much money on the over the years. So now I do that thing. I do, like you say, I look at the skill set that I'm missing that will project my business. And I only do courses now that will generate income for me. So it's now an investment, not just me trying to make myself feel good. And I think that's important, because there is an element of our confidence, because, you know, we're not typical. We're not, as people like to call it, normal, you know. So there's an element of, we don't feel confident in ourselves,
yeah.
And we feel like we have to be more, and we have to be better, and we have to be more trained, and we have to have more qualifications and all of this sort of stuff. And actually, no, some of the greatest minds in the world don't have qualifications. Some of the people with the largest businesses in the world don't have qualifications. And some of them even brag about the fact that they dropped out of college or dropped out of uni or whatever it is, you know. So it's about the skill set that you learn as you make mistakes. It's so important. Make the mistake, learn from it, move forward. And that's, you know, that will actually get you further than the £27 exactly. course that you see advertised on Facebook when you scroll. Because we're all being there.
Oh yeah. I don't want to think about it about me that's been on course. Gives me a heart attack about could be bought a house with that.
The thing is, there are courses that are needed, but you just have, and like you said, just make sure you are looking at your investment and you're actually doing a course that's going to progress you forward. It's going to get you those skills to get to the next level, to move your business forward and actually, you know, generate money back from you. So whatever you pay out, make sure you can generate at least 6 times that all the way back in.
I've actually put myself into jail and said that I'm not buying any courses for the next 12 months. No, I've got 2 this year. After these 2 are finished, I'm not buying any more courses for the next 12 months. I'm giving myself at least 12 to at least 12 months of no buying no courses.
Yeah, I said the same thing about stationery. So the same thing about stationery, and I'm sat here with my beautiful, I'll show you this now, my beautiful little pink notebook. Like, I promised myself no more stationery. I've got enough stationery. I think it's just gonna get to the point now. My husband's just gonna take Amazon off me, like completely, just take it away from me. Okay. I so love talking to you, Elaine. You bring me so much joy, and I thank you so much for doing this interview today. It's been brilliant. Considering I came onto this call, I told Elaine I was so tired because I had one of my 3 o'clock in the morning stints, and I've come onto this call with my energy a little bit lower than it would have been normally, but you've just got my energy up so much. I feel so happy. Thank you so much. And if anyone that's listening to this wants more advice and tips about inclusion, If there are any companies out there that want to know how to do inclusion, how to work on their diversity, if you want to know how to start a business or need help with starting a business and you have a disability or you are in a minority, please, please, please get in touch with us, get in touch with Elaine, and we will see what we can do to help you. Go to the rsmbusinesscompany.com/podcast. I will say that in one sitting at one point. But thank you so much, Lynn. It has been brilliant having you here. Next week, we're diving into the world of Marketing 101 with Rachel Hargrave as we explore the world of starting handmade businesses. You can find out more information online, like I said, at the artisanbusinesscompany.com/podcast. I'm getting there. Or follow us on the gram at Artisan Business Company. You won't want to miss it. Thanks for listening.
Take care. Bye.
The Motivated Creative Podcast is brought to you today by the Artisan Business Company. If you enjoyed today's show, please leave a review and share it with your friends. Your support helps us reach and help more creative entrepreneurs just like you. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Artisan Business Company for updates and behind the scenes content. Until next time, keep creating and stay motivated.